Welcome to the Mumbrella podcast, recorded at the studios of CBS Interactive. Today, with the demise of the population, is Australia ready for social media agencies? If you tweet at work, does your boss own your Twitter profile? Is Daryl Summers too old for Hey Hey? And Fairfax gets serious about online video. Welcome along, I'm Tim Burrows. With me, Scott Rohde, founder of social media and PR agency House Party.
Hi, Tim.
And Mumbrella deputy editor Camille Alacon.
Hello, folks.
Now, this week, Photon's social media agency, The Population, closed its doors. It was opened just over a year ago with $1 million investment from Photon and eventually had 8 staff. Now, Scott, what does this mean? Does it mean that the social media agency model doesn't work, do you think? Maybe the market isn't ready for it?
I don't think so at all. I think the problem might have been that the social media itself should be part of an overarching strategy. And I think that you can't just, you know, have this hub that just does it on its own. You know, you need to still take a step back and actually work with a company and for what it wants to do overall. I mean, that's why the company that I've set up is obviously social media and digital PR and digital crisis comms, because, you know, it's they all combine into one another, and I think it needs to be, you have to look at it as a bigger area than just social media.
Now, I totally accept that that's a really good argument to make, that point that you actually need to call on resource as much as anything.
Yes.
You know, it's something that, you know, I've seen a few agencies do, or even in sort of experiential stuff. Another example recently, the Ferrero Rocher Christmas lights,
yes,
at Circular Quay. By the next day, there was a nicely edited video up on YouTube with the light and the sound.
Mm.
Now, that's the sort of thing where the agency behind that, which was One Green Bean, a PR agency, was able to call on the production facilities of Host, its sister ad agency. So you can see why that kind of works.
Yeah, you need people to work together. You know, if you've got an agency that's just social media, then it's kind of missing out in the larger picture, I think.
But I'd make the argument that maybe there's a place for that, but actually
there is for some clients.
But presumably then it's about actually size and scale. You know, it seems to me that to get ahead when you're investing $1 million and you've got some expensive salaries and some very experienced people, some of whom are client-facing and running the P&L, you've got to win an awful lot of business before that agency ever becomes
profitable. Absolutely. I mean, if you look at, I think the standard model is you've got to bring in 3 times what your staff are getting paid, and, you know, that's a lot of money getting thrown out there. And, you know, was Australia ready to spend $3 million and with one company in social media? I'm not quite sure.
Camille.
Well, I mean, question for you, Scott, and given your new agency, do you think that social media, because for me, I'm not convinced that a pure play social media agency is necessary, especially when you have so many agencies on a, you know, big client's roster as it is. Do you think perhaps, given what the model that you've introduced, PR fits very well with social media, and a forward-thinking PR agency model coupled with social media is a better way to go, or within a digital agency, for example? I think
one of the keys is when you're involved in social media, you really need the resources. You need to be able to create sites. You need to be able to, have tools at your disposal if you need to create applications and that kind of thing. And I think that one of the problems is if you come from a straight PR agency, that you lack those resources. Mm. And then on the flip side, if you're just in a digital agency without a PR kind of company with you, then you lack that side of it, the communication side of it, which is why I've taken my kind of journalism, PR, and digital PR skills along with social media and combined it with a digital agency. You know, that's why I went inside Hot House to create this agency, because I think that you take the communication skills that you learn from one and you actually use it to work, and you've got all the tools at your disposal and the people you can work with. So, I mean, look, there's a lot of different models out there, that, and some will work, some will won't. I'm very confident that mine will work, I mean, to be honest with you, because I think that it's got enough from all sides to be able to combine into one force.
I suppose one question, though, is yours quite focused on the campaign model? So, in other words, you've got something to launch, a message to get out at a particular time. Whereas perhaps, arguably, shouldn't a brand keep in-house there, keep our profile ticking over, keep the conversation going?
Oh, I think yeah, that from that aspect, partly. But there's also aspects of a company, like you can do moderation for them when you can actually look at what people are saying about a company. You can go to them and say, look, these are the most important people out there. These are the people that you should be engaging with.
But shouldn't you be training them to do that for themselves?
Oh, a lot of the time they don't have the time to do it. That's just why they need agencies. So I think that, again, it depends entirely on the company, how much resources they have. Do they have the time to do that kind of stuff? And a lot of the time they don't. So, you know, we have to take it on board.
One other wash-up from the moves with the population is we've seen a couple of members of staff recently. One of them went across to Three Drunk Monkeys. Last week, Mumbrella reported that Julian Cole was moving over to the Conscience Organisation to help, you know, drive what they do in social media. Because they're quite a sort of interesting agency, and they're much more about the kind of long-form content. Mm. But good hire, do you think, for the Conscience Organisation?
Yeah. Julian's got his brain switched on. You know, his blog's been running for a long time. Although, you know, he does... one thing I admire about him is the fact that he actually puts up his failures on the site. You know, I mean, he wrote one recently about how the short-term campaign model, you know, can work with social media. The only thing that kind of annoyed me about that, sorry, Julian, was the fact that, you know, I'd been doing that 4 years ago when launching movies for Paramount, and I knew for a fact that it worked. So, you know,
the short term, build the profile, but then you don't keep the conversation going.
Yeah, but you can bring it back. Like when we launched Transformers, we could then bring it back when we launched Transformers 2.
I don't remember reading about that on your blog, though.
That's because I don't write a blog.
Exactly. Exactly. Camille, interesting move, Conscience Organisation.
Yeah, I know nothing about them, but I do now.
Well, this is the funny.
I tell you what. It seemed to be a bit of a controversial move. This Julian Cole personality, is he a bit of a celebrity in social media worlds?
Yeah, I suppose as much as anything, the thing that interests me about the Conscience Organisation is that they're much more about the long form content. Mm. They were the ones who, I don't know if you saw the little clip that went viral 3 or 4 weeks back of the Sony PlayStation being accelerated into the screen of the television.
Yeah, got about 350,000, 400,000
views. Yeah, just in the space of 48 hours. That was one of theirs.
Put anything out to video gamers, they'll go nuts for it.
Absolutely, particularly if it involves things smashing into things.
That's why Blend It does so well. Will It Blend, that's it.
Will It Blend, which is the... BlendTech is the company, isn't it?
Yeah, and they blend everything, well, virtually.
Yes. If you don't know what we're talking about, go to YouTube and Google Will It Blend, and you can see some amazing things. Including I think my favourite one was even iPhones blend if the blades are powerful enough. Okay. Now, this week saw the ABC's new comment website, The Drum, kick off. Camille, what do you think of The Drum?
I think it's really exciting for the industry, actually, because the ABC has been, you know, has a wealth of talent and knowledge, you know, really high profile and experienced reporters, commentators, you know, journalists. And it was about time they did something like this. Maybe this was the year to do it, as we know we saw the Punch and National Times launch. Personally, for me, I'd probably be more partial to the likes of The Drum or Crikey, just because, I don't know, Fairfax. National, I just think Fairfax, and then I think News Limited. I just think News Corp when I think of the Punch. And
well, let's get some verdicts on the four main players. So let's start off with Crikey, because their site's been around the longest, although they radically revamped it this year. So, Scott, what do you think of Crikey?
Oh, I love it.
So the website in particular, rather than the email newsletter.
The website's, you know, it's not bad. You know, the revamp helped it a lot, because I remember reading it 5 years ago and kind of going, oh, great.
Yeah,
it's a bit of a chore at times.
It's the classic aggregation model.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. But no, I mean, I've got a lot of time for Crikey.
Camille, Crikey?
I mean, it's established its credentials, so, I mean, for me, it's definitely industry leader.
Okay, and then the first arrival newly into the comments sphere this year was The Punch, which is News Limited's effort. Mm. Scott, The Punch?
Sometimes a bit too entertainment, kind of tabloid-esque for me at times. But overall, you know, I think there's some great stories on it. They broke some good stories, you know, and I think they're doing a lot better than what News itself is doing.
And particularly, I think where they go particularly well is when there's a big political story.
Yeah, they've got great political commentary.
You can tell that that's what you know, what they love.
That's what fuels them, yeah.
Absolutely, the Punch.
Well, it'll be definitely, you know, competition between the Drum and the Punch because they both got heavyweight political commentators, so that'll be interesting.
Okay, Fairfax is National Time, Scott?
Yeah, that's probably the best
way to say it. I haven't really dipped into it, to be honest with you, so...
Actually, one of the funny things is, and you were just saying there, Camille, about the Punch and the Drum being having heavy political commentators, but I find most Australians that I speak to don't really ever talk about politics, but yet there's these two sites that are trying to push politics all the time, and yet most people I speak to don't really give a damn.
Yeah, I guess for the National Times, the other thing is it's a different model as well, because really it's far more just re-aggregating what Fairfax do already. So I think it struggles to establish its own personality. You know, it just sits at the bottom of, you know, the Age and the SMH site. Yeah. So, you know, I kind of, in terms of a separate site, this one I think doesn't work because secretly Fairfax really want all of the traffic to go
to
the
Age. Absolutely. To them,
And then, the Drum, just to add my thoughts on that, the one issue I have actually is design. It feels too much like the rest of ABC Online and ABC Unleashed.
Yeah, which is a mess.
Yeah, it doesn't feel like it's designed as much as anything. It feels like they've sort of bolted it onto a template. So that for me is the single biggest thing. But, you know, I dipped in for a few minutes to, just to see what the latest was before we came in to do this. And happily found two or three things that are interesting.
Does it actually bother you that much? Does the design actually bother you that much? Yeah. I mean, it doesn't really bother me, to be honest.
I find
the
whole ABC website a total mess. I find I love the news stories there, but I find trying to find stories or anything is just terrible. And it actually annoys me.
And don't forget, sometimes bad design, it's not about not bothering you. It's just the fact that it doesn't engage you in the first place, so you don't notice it.
Makes it difficult to search what you want as well. Yeah.
Okay, well, a related topic. Now, two of the people behind the Drum, Jonathan Green, the editor, Annabelle Crabb, who is going to be working across a number of ABC outlets, former columnist on the Sydney Morning Herald, they gave the site a good old launch. They pushed it hard. They tweeted all about it. They both got thousands of Twitter followers. Now, the thing is, Jonathan Green built up that following when he was on Crikey, the editor on Crikey. Annabelle Crabb did the same when she was at the SMH. Should they have left their profiles behind when they went?
No.
Why?
I think if it's your name attached to it, then it's your profile. If it had been, Annabelle Crabb, SMH, Annabelle Crabb, Fairfax, then that would be, you'd have that account linked to where you work. But as it is, I think that account is with their name and they're their own brand.
But the reason why she got the following, yes, she got the job because she was powerful, but also because she was a powerful writer, but also because the SMH would put her image on the front page every day.
Absolutely, but people are still going to... people followed her Twitter stream not for her news stories, but for her individual comments her thought process.
As much as SMH has given her, you know, the leg up and given her a chance, she's also helped build the SMH brand. Mm. And then she's also become her own brand and personality in her own right.
Yeah, I totally disagree with both of you, though.
Wow.
You know, it's exactly like...
It'd be interesting to see your umbrella policy on Twitter.
Yes, and there will be one.
There's a review.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Fascist dictatorship kicking in.
But it's exactly like, if you're a journalist and you write stories for your owner and you change owners, you can't take your stories with you.
No, you can't. But your name is not your name is your brand. It's not attached to the company. That company's paying you to do them a service. But you're still... What about all the tweets you do when you leave work? When you're at the weekends, you know, everything like that, that's you. You work more, you spend more time not working than you do working. And if you spend more time tweeting outside of work than you do in work, and by the way, in work it's still promoting the company that you're working for at that time. So therefore, I can only assume that the policy that you want to set in place terrifies me. Because in today's day and age, we need to be able to stand up and say, well,
I don't know what my policy is yet, but I think there needs to be a conversation. And the policy I lean towards is, hey, you know, I want you to tweet. I want you to tweet on my behalf. But when you go, you leave that profile behind. Now, it might be that you get to that we don't use it ourselves, so it doesn't just become, you know, rather than Dave, it becomes Sharon or something. It might not do that, but I don't see why I should help a potential future competitor get a leg up on.
Because it's not about that. It's
well, it is, isn't it? One of the reasons why the Drum launched so strongly is because one of the many reasons, but one of the reasons is because Jonathan Green and Animal Crab had a great Twitter profile and they were able to tell all of their
but
followers.
But it's similar to what you said, Mumbrella, that you've got your contacts for X amount of years. I still have all my contact books from when I was a journalist, and I have every business card from every job I've ever done. So, you know, are you saying that I should hand, every time I leave a company, I should hand back my business
cards?
Well,
this cards? Is the question. Now, if contact books didn't exist, we invented them now, and people coming out the principle, you'd say they probably belong to the owner. You probably should leave them behind. Now, clearly, because there's established practice, which is journalists take their contacts with them, everyone understands that. But I think if a journalist were to walk into their boss and say, by the way, boss, I'd also like to take the database with me, with, you know, the 80,000, company contacts we've got or something, you know, the advertiser database
but that's,
or something.
But that's not what...
But Twitter is somewhere in between the two, isn't it?
Absolutely, it's in between. But I think that if it's your name attached to it, look, if you call yourself at Mumbrella, you know, that's fine. That stays with Mumbrella. You know, if you want to call yourself Fairfax Commentator... then that's how it
goes. Don't forget, you can change the name at the drop of
a hat. Well, absolutely, yeah, but when it boils down to
it. So, for instance, I know of agencies that might be XXPR, then the person's name, XXPR Sharon.
We'll call it SMH Commentators and then have the person's name. That's how, if you're going to do it right, you want to control your brand, do it that way. Otherwise.
And then you wouldn't be allowed to take it with you.
Yes. Because that makes more sense.
But if you do that, and this is where I almost reversed my position in the attempt to be devil's advocate.
I'm just confused now. So you've actually backtracked.
No. What I'm saying is...
Scott and I have both reversed our position.
Yeah, no. What I'm saying is, if you're... The actual full name of it is SMH Commentator, right?
Yeah.
And under it is... You have SMH Commentators 1 to 10, and each one is one of the different commentators.
So you're saying don't give them a name?
Yes.
Okay, what if it's
SMH? No, you've got the name below them.
Okay, so what if the actual ID, though, is SMH Annabelle Crab?
Well, in that case, it stays with SMH. If it's branded initially
so it's
as that...
Well, it's lucky that Camille tweets as Mumbo Cam, then, isn't it?
But I think it is all about the name, because I think that, like, my Twitter name is obviously at Scott Rohde.
Obviously.
That's my name, and it's also my brand, wherever it goes. You know, and I've built up my followers through various reasons, through personal reasons, through networking, through different jobs. And I think that... And a lot of the people that I have in my Twitter are people that I've met in jobs past and all that kind of stuff. And it's more than just a marketing tool.
I think this is when I can't wait until there's a legal test of this.
Oh, I can't wait either.
Well, moving on, it's been a good week for radio, and it has been a while since I've said that. Now, there's been a year of decline. Each month, new results would come out, city by city, so the five metro markets, and each time it would be down a bit before. And finally, November saw the radio market back up by 4%, and Sydney back on top. Now, I need to kind of confess a bit on the Sydney back on top a bit, because... I've been waiting for months, watching the data come out each month, and each time, because Melbourne was declining ever so slightly more slowly than Sydney, it was getting closer and closer to being on top. A month ago, it finally overtook, and I missed the story. I wasn't in the office on the day.
Did you tweet that?
I didn't see the data come in.
Shocking exclusive, Tim Burrows misses story.
And it was only when the most recent data for November came in, I thought, hang on, I don't remember seeing this data for a while. Went back and sure enough, there it was, unopened in my inbox. So the moment when Melbourne came on top, I missed it. And it's over because Sydney's back on.
That's a non-story there then, thanks.
So the brief shining moment that Melbourne was on top in Australia was the radio market. Nobody reported it.
Oh, poor Melbourne.
And now it's over because everyone's bounced back and Sydney's bounced back a little bit more than Melbourne. And the question is it over or is that a one-off blip?
I think 6 months or so, pretty much.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, a couple of other things just while we're on radio. Last few days I've seen some changes for the Sydney lineups in particular. Now, as we already know, it's the end of the road for Merrick and Rosso with the awkwardly bolted on Kate Ritchie.
Not being subjective at all.
Well, I suppose I think it used to be Merrick and Rosso, and then
they added TV, leave her alone.
Yes, her first love of television. So we're waiting to hear what would happen next for Nova, which they've now announced. And it's also going to have had a sort of knock-on effect for ABC's Triple J 2. Kumail, do you want to clear that one up for us?
Yeah, well, joining Merrick in the hot seat in a morning breakfast show, is actually Triple J's Scott Dooley. Now, he actually started off as a work experience kid. in Triple J, I think 6 years ago or something, he won a comp trying to figure out a mascot for Triple J, and he said, a brick. They thought, perfect. So they brought him in, he made tea, and then he was, I think, the breakfast weekend presenter. And they did drive time, and now he's moved on. There was a bit of a reshuffle for breakfast in Triple J as well, Triple J breakfast.
Yeah, so Scott has now it was interesting, actually, because there was a fair bit of comment on the Umbrella comment stream from listeners over the weekend.
He's got a few fans, actually.
We reported that. But a few of them kind of felt that he'd sold out, be able to do his thing on commercial radio.
Well, didn't American Rosso do a bit of Triple J as well? So they made the move.
Yes. Again, the point people made was not as much freedom.
It wasn't as good.
Is that the impression you get, Scott? Do people get diluted when they go commercial?
I think they do. I think it happens to everyone. You know, the mighty buck takes them over sometimes. But I think, you know, hopefully they'll let him, you know, won't give him too much of a leash, and he'll just be able to do what he wants to do.
They'll end up as Today FM.
But I think he had a Twitter.
Kyle.
He got to change his Twitter
took his Twitter profile with him and changed the name as well. So he just went from Triple J Scott or something along those lines to...
There you go.
Yeah, exactly. But that argues against your policy.
Well, I know,
it?
But that's what I was just saying. That's what I was just thinking. I just remembered that. And look, I think if you set up your own Twitter profile, then you probably could do it without your company ever wanting to stop you.
We won't reopen the debate on that. When I interrupted, you were talking about other changes.
Well, also Ricky Lee Coulter from, I will say this,
please. A little harsh.
From Australian Idol fame, in inverted commas, is joining she's going to be the Kate Ritchie for 2010. So it's going to be Dooley and Merrick and Ricky Lee Coulter. And she's just cutting her teeth now, isn't she, at the moment with the Australian Idol, which has just finished for the year. So she's new to radio, from what I understand.
Yeah, I think she's done a lot of interviews over her 4 or 5 years of fame, I guess.
Yeah.
But the other question, of course, is how long is she on board for? A couple of people asked very kind of cynical questions in our comment stream on, well, how long's the contract? Is this just a summer appointment? So we'll see.
Well, yeah, I mean, they have to all prove themselves. But, it'll be a slow build. It will be a slow build. It's a new team that establishing new dynamics. And, of course, they're going to just hit it like that.
And the end of the American-Rosso relationship as well. I interviewed them once. I had one of the strangest interviews ever. It was at Nova in Brisbane, and they've got this kind of meeting room just full of beanbags. So it's very, very strange when you're kind of lolling around on a beanbag while you're trying to interview these people. Not least that, but I'd not been in the country very long at the time, and very kindly the station manager there, who is a top bloke, by the way, they happened to be ready. Look, I'll get you an interview. But I'd been in the country about a month, so there was an awful lot of bluff as I tried to ask them about their work and what they were working on. And
so you didn't feel any tension between the two?
No, lots of very positive banter, actually.
Were they holding hands?
They weren't holding hands. No, they weren't as close as that. And there was no holding hands whatsoever in the beanbag room. But that is quite enough Triple J and Nova fun. Fairfax Digital made a big hiring this week with Ricky Sutton.
From News of the Screws.
Yeah, back in the day he was News of the Screws. Now, did you ever cross over with him when you were taking the Murdoch shilling back in the
No. I haven't came across him before.
So Ricky Sutton, he's taking on the role of head of video at Fairfax Digital. I've crossed paths a couple of times with Ricky. Very entertaining character. You must, if ever anybody meets him, ask him to tell you the story of the Beast of Bodmin. I won't spoil it by telling it now, but just ask him to tell that story. Camille, what did you make of the move? Fairfax getting serious about video, do you think?
Well, you would think so. I mean, they've all been very active this year, haven't they, the online publishers? And I know for us, video content is very important. It's integral to everything we do. Not least our live streaming at the awards this week as well. But I suppose what also was getting Ricky excited when I was chatting to him was, the move from short form to long form content and just the various challenges in the wider media market, up against the free-to-airs, for example, set-top boxes and IPTV and mobile. Like, it's just part of a really, really big and growing and developing industry. And, it's great to see the publishers getting into this and investing into it.
Yeah, it does feel to me like its moment is kind of arriving. You've got the big media agencies complaining about there not being enough inventory, for instance, to play their video ads against, which seems to be a good sign.
Well, funnily enough, I was speaking recently at the Sydney Social Media Club, and there was a roundtable on the future of video, and we were discussing SMH and Fairfax and News International's video offerings. And, you know, the general consensus seemed to be that they're not actually that well liked because, well, number one is you can hardly ever get them to load, which is a bit of a problem with the proprietary systems that they have. I can't get news to work at all in my when I use my Mac, which is really strange. It'll load up one out of every six times. Plus, you're pushing journalists to multi-skill. You know, they've got to learn how to write, not only do they write, they have to film, edit, you know, present. And a lot of these people aren't good presenters.
I suppose it also depends where what the background is from, yeah, as well, isn't it? Because, for instance, you know, newspapers, you could see them reskilling the photographers.
Yeah.
Although, again, there is a whole different kind of grammar to video content. You know, there's this, and this is where it becomes vague for me. There's, you know, not crossing the line. In other words, you shoot everything from the same direction, so it's easy to tell the story.
Well, it's like somebody said at the round table we were at that, like the ComSec, when they have somebody from ComSec speaking, the guy's obviously, you know, an amazing analyst, but he's a terrible presenter. And when it boils down to it, when it comes down to video content, if you've not got something that you want to watch or somebody who actually you want who is actually good at what he does or she, then you end up going, oh, this is really boring, and switching it off. So it's creating content that's going to be interesting to people.
Yeah, not doing it for the sake of it.
Yeah, you know, and that's the real problem. Yeah, and I hope, you know, hopefully they can turn it around with this guy coming on board.
Well, moving on to Ray Martin and Hey Hey and Nine's new lineup.
It's back. Good.
Yes, so Nine finally revealed their plans for 2010. And fair to say there weren't many surprises. Hey Hey's coming back. Let's hear what former Nine stalwart Ray Martin had to say to us about that.
Hey Hey would work every Saturday night. You'd have to revamp it, and you know, maybe Daryl ought to pass on the baton to someone younger. I'm not saying he should, because it worked the other night fantastically, but I think that it's that the concept was one of those that kids watched and grandmas watched. But I think there is something there. For example, someone said the other day to me that Cliff Richard coming out here, that they'd put four more concerts for Cliff Richard in Melbourne and four more in Sydney, and they'd been sold out. After Pink, he will be the second biggest concert tour of the year. So to forget there's an audience out there, to forget that in fact, you know, they want to see a 70-year-old, you know, gentle rocker from London. Now, television forgets that. We are, as in advertising, for some reason that I'll go to my grave not understanding, we are obsessed with this young demographic. And we forget that that people of my generation and people 10 years younger and 10 years older actually have disposable cash.
So, Camille, what do you think? New presenter needed for Hey Hey? Daryl Summers over the hill, do you think?
Interesting commentary stream about that, actually. And Tim, you had a chat to him about that.
Yeah, so that clip was actually recorded a few weeks back.
We
were talking about video a few moments ago. Well, we do the Mumbo Report, which we put up a couple of pieces every week that we film at the studios of Studio 33. And when we talked to Ray Martin about his book, one of the pieces that didn't make it just for time was the conversation about Hey Hey. So we've been sitting on that clip for a couple of weeks until it became relevant, which obviously with the launch of Hey Hey it was. So that was why we put that story up this week. And it was much reported, actually.
The
Telegraph went big on it. So it also made a little piece in the Sunday Telegraph as well. So I'm not sure if they
overlooked the fact that
their colleague had done it. The Oz kindly wrote about it too. And the TV Tonight blog as well. So much coverage for the issue of Daryl being too old.
Congratulations to you for breaking a national story.
Well, thank you very much.
That's all right.
So, Daryl, too old?
I don't think so. I think he's got a lot of good skills, but I know that they'll probably want to ditch him in favour of somebody young and funky and wacky.
I presume he owns the format himself, though, and I don't think he's going anywhere. I think it would be very, very unlikely if there's anyone but him.
Look, I find him to be one of the most consummate professionals in Australia.
Really? I find him one of the most annoying presenters I've ever
seen. I grew up on it. See, I loved it. It was a family, it very much was a family moment. And, you know, it's rare to have those kinds of times in television, especially today with time shifting and everything.
Okay, well, briefly talk us through some of the rest of Nine's lineup.
It's really interesting. As has been said, there's a lot of, it's very crime show heavy. Obviously, the return of Underbelly, so hoping for a big hit again next year. They've also got a new one called The Real Hustle. And I don't know if this is from
the
UK.
This is the Claire Werbeloff one, isn't it?
Yeah, the Chick Chick Boom Girl.
Is this based on the UK's Hustle?
I think it would, it is.
I love Hustle in the UK.
Using hidden cameras.
It's not the one you're thinking of.
Oh, damn.
Because the UK had The Hustle, which was like some grifters and adventures of them.
That's great.
Then The Real Hustle, which is like a doco on how it's done.
Oh.
the comment. It's basically using hidden cameras and a team of Aussie con artists. They're just exposing the clever scams and how you can be scammed.
So how many episodes do we give it in prime time before it gets hacked?
How many are there usually? Eights or six?
A series can have 13 sometimes, yeah. but before it gets hacked.
I would go axed. That's very harsh. That's very cynical of you, Tim.
So you're seven. Saying it's going to get a whole series?
Eight. They might have a short series. I'm going for eight.
Scott?
I think it depends entirely on the content.
Yeah, but not how many get made, how many get aired.
Oh, how many get aired? Oh, that sounds... Look, the UK one, I've seen a few episodes of that now you've actually reminded me what it was, and yeah, it wasn't that enjoyable.
I liked it.
I liked the first two, and then I realised all the rest would probably be the same, so I'm going to give it, yeah, five.
I'll give it three in prime time.
Ooh, three, five.
In prime time,
yeah,
okay.
Then they'll move it out.
Lots and other new crime shows. So Australian Federal Police.
Yes, this one is a good one. I think this is the thing that I will definitely be tuning in for.
Oh, good.
The Andrew Denton one. They've been working on that for absolutely ages. Now, the reason I happen to know this is because the offices of their studio just round the corner from Umbrella's offices, and you walk past, and the place looks like an absolute fortress because obviously all of the footage and some very sensitive stuff is in there, and there are bars on every window, there are heavy doors. There is no way anyone is coming in through those windows. So, you know, there's been a lot of security on the footage, and I get the sense from talking to one or two people who've been involved on the periphery that they're quite excited about the content.
Right.
So that'll be a good one.
I think it will usurp Channel 7's dominance in the observational programming category.
Sounds like it's got the potential.
And a lot of it is just because it's got the Andrew Denton name attached, you know, because it's his production company behind it.
Well, other new shows as well. So a series starring Rebecca Gibney and Vince Colosimo. Wicked Love, the Maria Korp story. The urban thriller. Actually, I don't know anything about it, but I'm really reading it right now.
Which is good, because we're running tight on time. Anything else you want to
Another one, moving into the observational program categories, Send in the Dogs, a new factual series that follows trained canines who are fighting crime. We're so obsessed with these types of shows and fighting crime.
Is this Inspector Rex?
Inspector Rex.
We're bringing the dogs in now. I don't know what else. Then it's going to be the...
Inspector Rex Australia.
Inspector Bruce.
And finally, Nando's. Camille, you wrote an opinion piece this week in Champion of the Daggy Ad.
In Champion of the Daggy Ad. No, look, I'm not its champion. However, I could see how it could actually work for some consumers, i.e. potentially myself, because basically...
Well, talk us through the ad in question.
Well, first of all, I mean, they have this a strategy at Nando's. And their ad agency, the Sphere agency, of latching on to what's happening in the news at the moment and, you know, launching an ad radio or cinema ad off the back of that. So, for example, when Britney Spears was here during her world tour and she was panned for her miming, they launched a radio ad with Britney talking or not talking because she was miming and there was no sound. And this latest one is basically off the back of New Moon, the new movie which is launched.
About vampires and stuff.
Vampires, yes, if anyone's been living under a rock. This featured Warwick Capper, the old AFL great and self-styled million-dollar man, in very tight, tight little leopard print trunks. Now, he was promoting the new Tropico burger, and it was just an image of him, and they were playing with him, pretending he was talking, and they painted some fangs and sideburns to show that he was a vampire, whatever. But, I mean, basically, I think what Nana's has been great at is that just really tapping into that junk food news to kind of drive fast food consumption. It's very much, you know, they sell chicken at the end of the day, for God's sake.
And there has been this issue, hasn't it, that everyone, ourselves included, we pounce on an advert and get a good kicking if it's not creative, but sometimes can lose sight of the fact that it's got to flog units.
Yeah, and I think that it potentially is doing that. I mean, and it's, no, absolutely, it's not there to win best in craft or best script, but for me it works. And
Do you want to eat a Nando's?
Yeah, I'm all about the chicken.
Well, there you go. That's the point to leave it. That's all we have time for today. So thanks as ever to CBS Interactive for lending us the studio. My thanks to Georgina Pearson for production, to Scott Rohde as ever, and to Camille Alacon. I'm Tim Burrows, and that was the Mumbrella Podcast. Toodle pip.
Toodle pip.
Toodle pip.